Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. Always nice to have you along. I'm Neil Stavem. This is Connecting Faith. Ryan Thomas sitting in the controls today. RT, appreciate you stepping in.
Hey, good day to you, sir.
We've had a great conversation here before our official conversation with our guest today.
It's been pretty magical thus far.
Yeah. We could. There's a number of things we could talk about, from farming to retirement to singing, preaching.
He gave you some great life advice.
I thought he did.
Buying a horse.
Every day, I guess even a bad day on a horse is better than a good day at work something. I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I'm happy to welcome in studio today. We have the opportunity to visit with Dr. Timothy Wachiria, who is the vice chancellor at Daystar University. We would call that, I guess, president.
Yes, it is.
Daystar is a major Christian university. It's one of the noted universities, really, in Kenya and perhaps all of Africa. Some 4,500 students. They have their institutional longstanding, have trained up many current and certainly, I believe, future leaders in the continent of Africa and really around the world, and it is an honor to have Dr. Wachiria in our studios today. His major area of study has been in medical science with a focus on research and public health, and studied at the University of Liverpool and worked in veterinary research for years, right, before, and then for a time leading the Kenyan version of the InterVarsity Christian Fellowship and St. Paul's University before coming to Daystar. So is that a good summary?
Yes, that's a good summary.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Yes, I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you so much. And by the way, for those in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, Daystar University actually has their U.S. headquarters in the Twin Cities area, and you have an event going on at Christ Presbyterian Church in Edina coming up this Friday night.
Yes, right?
Friday night at 5:30. Yes. So we'll mention that again at the end. But I thought, Dr. Wachiria, maybe just a word about Daystar. 4,500 students, a variety of disciplines teaching, right? It's not a seminary necessarily.
It's not a seminary. It's a university with more than 25 different programs, both in social sciences, in business, and in science. The main flagship program is communication, it has greatly impacted the communication industry within the country and beyond in the East African region. And then the other bigger one is business, all different courses of business, then community development, and then now we have nursing, and the programs are both undergraduate and postgraduate masters and some PhD programs. Mm. Yes.
Most of us probably don't spend nearly as much time thinking about Africa as we should, but obviously parts of Africa, not necessarily in Kenya, but have been in the news, and you have some background in medicine and medical research, so maybe we talk about the threat of diseases like Ebola, and I'm interested maybe in your perspective. How does a nation like Kenya prepare itself for the possibility of that spreading into a country like Kenya?
Kenya is very much aware that a disease like Ebola is a very devastating disease. One, because of the infection rate is usually very high. The death rate is also very high, and containing it, if it's not contained at the very early stages, can spread very quickly. Kenya has one of the highest of most impacting airlines, which travels now West Africa, South Africa, North Africa. And one of the things that Kenya did is to withdraw most of its routes in West Africa. I guess the only route that is left now is in Nigeria, where the disease is pretty well contained. It was a very hard decision to take because that means your relationship with that country is severely affected because there's the time of need, and that's when you are withdrawing the airline. But it was taken as a way of preventing the spread of the disease. The other one is to prepare by ensuring that isolation locations have been put up and people trained and set on alert and continually monitor around the country whether there is any incidents that would occur. It is difficult. Kenya has had an experience of ensuring such kind of things do not happen because the previous outbreaks of Ebola have been in Congo, which is near Kenya, and the other one has been in Uganda in the previous, maybe about 10 years ago. And the issue of closing the border and controlling the spread has been what the efforts that Kenya has been doing. And all this time, we have never had a case in Kenya, but that doesn't mean it can come.
Well, speaking of Kenya, it was just, a year or so ago that we saw the terrible terrorist attack in a suburban mall. It looked much like any a mall in America, and it was devastating and many lives affected. Tell me a little bit about Kenya and even in the greater parts of Africa. It seems like there's a much more unrest these days, or that radical terrorism has maybe found a foothold or is advancing. Just some of your thoughts about why that is, and particularly maybe how Kenyans have been affected by that.
Kenya has been affected by terrorism severely. And the first time we started experiencing attacks from terrorists is as early as 1998. You remember there was an attack on the U.S. Embassy that was destroyed in Nairobi in 1998. And the other one was in Tanzania, which is a neighboring country. Since then, there has been a few episodes, but not as big as the one that you have just mentioned, the terrorist attack in the mall. This is more of a reflection of what is happening all over the world. I think terrorism is a major issue now in the world. In Asia, you remember what happened in, was it Malaysia? Mm-hmm. Then what has happened in UK, in Germany, in US. I think the number of people who have died in US out of terrorism are more than what the number that have died in Kenya. Then in Egypt, in North Africa, in Middle East. I think we are saying that terrorism is now an issue that needs to be addressed, and obviously the importance of it cannot be overemphasized by the fact that UN is currently now just discussing that, terrorism all over the world. Kenya just happens to be a neighbor of Somalia, and a country that has for the last 24 years has had no government, no centralized government, and therefore has provided a safe haven for the Al-Qaeda, an equivalent of an Al-Qaeda form of organization, focused on just radicalizing and the spread of radicalized Islam. And the brunt of it is that Kenya, which has provided a safe haven for many, many refugees. And most of those who have been refugees in Kenya end up here in Minnesota. Mm. And that, in the process of providing that, then that also provides the route for the spread of those who are radicalized and affect Kenya. About 5 years ago, Kenya decided to send an army into Somalia to help stabilize that country. And that irritated the terrorists a little bit more. And that's the result of this. It's what we had in the terrorist attack. But Kenya is determined to play its role in curtailing the spread of these terrorist attacks. But above all, I think the issue is for those who are Christians to just realize that it's, as much as we may say this is not a faith issue, it is those who advance it do it in the name of Islam. And that means it's also against the Christianity. And the commitment of the Christians in Kenya is to pray, is to recognize that we do not rise up in arms ourselves, but we have a God who controls the world. None will be able to rise against that which God has said. Christ said that not even the hell itself will stand his commitment and his direction.
You know, when we think of maybe religious persecution, don't probably normally think of Kenya. But is it a challenge to be a follower of Christ in Kenya today? Or maybe is it different now than it was, say, you know, 10, 20 years ago?
There is a religious freedom in the country. Part of the Constitution of Kenya ensures that each and every person can practice their faith with the relative freedom. But of the areas in which we have high concentration of the Muslims, that is along the Somali border, it occasionally becomes a challenge because they would not want the advancement of Christianity, and occasionally they destroy the churches. So there is a challenge at that level. But for the rest of the country, the challenges that are there are any of the challenges that a Christian would experience anywhere else in the world as they seek to live out their faith. There is no particular focus on Christians as to why they should not be Christians or spread the faith.
Talking to Dr. Timothy Wachuria, who is the vice chancellor. He's the president of Daystar University, and in our studios today to give us just a little update about what God's doing at Daystar and in Kenya and across Africa. We're going to talk a little bit about the church moving, the center of Christianity moving south and east, and what that looks like. Also talk about, you know, training up students today as well and some of those questions. By the way, if you have a question or maybe you'd like just to say hello, Dr. Wachuria, you're welcome to give us a call at 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH. We'll continue in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. It's 18 past the hour, and we're spending a few minutes today with Dr. Timothy Wachuria, who is the president. He's the vice chancellor of Daystar University. It is a major university in Nairobi, some 4,500 students, and they have 20-plus programs, areas of communication, business, government, a lot of those things. In fact, Northwestern has had a student and faculty exchange with Daystar, and Northwestern Media has provided studio equipment for Daystar student radio station Shine FM and has purchased some TV camera equipment to be used in production classes. So our relationship goes way back, and we're honored to have Dr. Wachuria in our studio today. We're talking a little bit about the Christian faith in Kenya. I'm interested in talking a little bit about your perspective on the shift of, you know, we've heard say Christianity is sort of shifting from North America to it's moving south and east. I'm wondering what that means, maybe as a Kenyan Christian. Kenya going to become sort of much more a center in, maybe center of influence in Christianity?
I think so. I think so. And that is something that is both a privilege but also a responsibility. It's a privilege to watch what God is doing in our region, that people are open to the gospel, and many people come to know the Lord Jesus Christ and commit themselves to follow him. But it's also a great responsibility in recognizing that coming to Christ, then it is our responsibility to take up the mantle, and that the window is not open for long. Unfortunately, things in this world currently move pretty fast. So that I see that as it opens, as the window has opened, it's also closing in pretty fast. The influence of the gospel from the West, which is highly welcome, has also, that window has not closed of influence. And therefore, the influence of materialism and of relativism is also coming in pretty fast. And where we do not take care, killing the seed pretty fast. And so the church in Kenya is pretty aware that they have a great responsibility not only to maintain the faith in the country, but also to spread it out to the neighboring regions and beyond. That's why this is part of this commitment to ground the faith, not just in church, but to communicate that faith is to be believed, not just to be believed. It's not an issue of just believing, it's to live it, both in your career and every bit that the Lord calls you to be in. And therefore, as we bring it to the education arena, is to communicate that education is godly. Career are avenues of ministry. They are avenues of our calling before God. And we all need to recognize that we are called to live our faith and to be committed to communicate Christ. So we are very proud as part of Daystar to be involved in grounding the faith in this continent.
Daystar has been known for their great communications training, and I know many graduates have positions of influence there, but that's also the case in business and in the government. We're well aware that ethics at all those levels sometimes leave something to be desired. So talk maybe a little bit about how you train your students, or maybe what are some of the key aspects of helping them to be ethical leaders, whether it's in business or government or whatever it might be.
The problem of corruption or lack of ethics within the governments in the East African or African region, but also particularly in Kenya, we are very alive to it. We are very clear that the Lord has endowed African continent with vast resources and with quite a variety of people groups that bring diversity and strength, and that this continent is loved of God and is a continent that the Lord would want to use for His glory. Therefore our mission in bringing the issues of ethics to the students is a clear mandate, not only from the church, but from God Himself. And how do we go about it? It's first and foremost to ensure that the staff that we recruit are all Christians, and we seek to recruit people who love Jesus, people who also love the students, people who also love their career, and through it they would want to communicate to students as they teach in an integrated way. What does it mean to be in business and in an ethical way? Both from the first principles of business and throughout, they're not as separate issues, but also coming to communication and doing it exactly the same. But outside the class, to be able to model that so that Daystar leaves and teaches the ethical behavior, the ethical practices, so that in the end we are able to bring out and graduate people who will make a difference in society. As many as we are able to influence, we are very grateful to God. But when that doesn't happen for some, that's obviously a sad thing. But we see from the products that we have in society of what the Lord is doing through Daystar, of people in non-government organizations, in government, in business, in people who say that, yes, I know I could be this and that, but I will go back to my local community to be able to bring an influence in my community. I know they need water, they need food, they need health, and I can make a difference there. And they go because of their love for Jesus and their love for people.
Now, speaking of making a difference in some of the needs, what would you say, what is Kenya maybe, or maybe Africa in general? It's a huge continent, obviously. There is differences. What do they need most from the West, and maybe particularly what does Kenya need from the Western Church? What do we have that we can offer that would be most beneficial to you?
I think as not just as Kenya Church, but the global church, I think the first principle of Christianity is interdependence. And I think any community that holds themselves as self-sufficient, they delude themselves. We need to be able to partner with one another. That's part of the gospel, to be able to work together at the individual level, at the group level, but also at the national level. But there are those some occasionally who be need more in need or appear to be more in need than the other. And for a long time, the church in Africa or the church in Kenya has benefited greatly from missionaries who have come to spread the gospel. And we can be talking of the third and fourth generation of people who have believed in Jesus Christ because of the missionary enterprise that has taken place in this continent, and we'll be forever grateful. But at the same time, there is now need for the African continent to recognize that the continent has come to a level where it needs also to start impacting the rest of the world. So part of it is for the rest of the world to recognize the vast resource in human capital of people who love Jesus, who can influence the rest of the world, and to facilitate that. But also there is a great need of partnership in financial issues, but even just support of encouragement, of visiting each other at equal level. I think for a long time the church in the West has taken the position of a senior brother. I think there is need for partnership at equal level, but of just the love of Jesus and being able to say, how do we work together? There is obviously a lot of wealth in the West that can be of great use to the country and to the continent.
Good insight and encouragement and challenge to us today from Dr. Timothy Wachiria. We only have a minute left. Do we want to talk horses or anything like that? No. No. Okay. All right. So, well, we were having that discussion before the broadcast about
about the horses.
Yeah, whether a pickup would be better or if we just go with a horse.
I think the I agree the pickup is
the
better.
The pickup is better. Yes.
Yeah, right. Because the snow may come.
This is true. This is true. And
yes.
And thankfully you came in a season where that is very rare.
Yes.
So you picked your time to visit here wisely. For those in the Minneapolis St. Paul area, there is a special event and just understanding, awareness, and a fundraiser for Daystar University at Christ Presbyterian Church in Edina. And that's coming up Friday night, starts at 5:30, and we'll have some details here on campus if you are interested in being a part of that, if you're able to go and have a chance to meet Dr. Wachiria in person. Good to see you again. Thank you for coming on today.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. And again, Dr. Timothy Wachiria from Daystar University. It's a partner ministry here of Northwestern Media. And we're thankful, by the way, for all the listeners who have over the years supported this station, because part of your support has gone to help the partnership there in Kenya and Nairobi. And we're thankful for that. Coming up in a moment, we're going to talk about the great outreach going on all around the nation this morning. It's called See You at the Pole, and we're going to hear from the North Central Regional Director of the National Youth National Network of Youth Ministries, and we'll get the details on that to get a little firsthand report as well, coming up in a moment. So stay tuned for that, all ahead here on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we have connected now with Jason Cott, who is the North Central Regional Coordinator for the National Network of Youth Ministries. And That song appropriate here as we open up our time with Jason, because there were a number of students today, and not just today, but have on a daily basis have decided that they're going to live like a believer. They're going to follow Christ. They're going to not shy away from naming the name of Jesus. And so gathered all around flagpoles and parking lots and a number of places around schools across the nation, students gathering for the annual See You at the Pole prayer time this morning. And it Jason represents the what's going on in the upper Midwest. So we just wanted to kind of get a little report. Jason, good to talk with you. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Neil, thanks. It's good to be on the program with you to share about See You at the Pole.
So this is maybe just by way of a little background, because people aren't familiar. This See You at the Pole started, two, three decades? It's been around for a long time. Right?
Yeah, it's been around for a while. It has been since 1990. It started in Burleson, Texas, with just a small group of kids who felt very convicted to go to their school and pray. It actually started at night, and they began to pray together. And, well, the next that word got out, and some youth pastors heard about this, and they highlighted at a local youth, a large youth gathering that covered a few different states. And it just kind of slowly took off from there. And by the time 1991 came around, there were about a million students already starting to gather at their flagpole at their school to pray.
Hmm. Do we have any idea? I mean, it happened this morning. It's like, what, about 7:15 each, whatever time zone you're in, right? Isn't that when they generally gather?
Yeah, typically it starts at about 7 o'clock in the morning. But it really does depend on whether or not, you know, some schools, like my son's school, they have band already at 7 o'clock in the morning. So sometimes kids want to start a little earlier so they don't get in trouble and
sure.
miss some class or you know, 0-hour classes.
Yeah. So speaking of getting in trouble, let's just address that. Do students get in trouble for gathering? Because this is a student-led event, right? It's not something the network of youth ministers are putting together, and there aren't adults hanging out there, right?
Absolutely not. It's totally legal. In fact, it was part of the Equal Access Act back in the 80s that Reagan actually made it such that it is that students are able to meet on campus. If a chess club can meet, then a Bible club can meet. But See You at the Pole was actually specifically mentioned by President Clinton in an address to the Secretary of Education that See You at the Pole is legal and covered by the Constitution. So kids have the free right. As long as it's student-led, student-initiated, we're good. But you know, sometimes adults, well-meaning adults, want to help out, which is great beforehand, but you really want to empower students to be taking prayer to their school and to be praying for their friends and for each other, because I believe this generation of students is bold enough to say, yeah, we want to pray. And it's not so much a protest. It's not like they're standing up and say, look at us. Rather, the idea is to help them to understand what it means to humbly pray, and that God is sovereign in their life, and that they want to be their subject to Him and want to live for Him. And this is one way that they can come together and do that.
You know, before we talk a little bit more about that, do you have any idea, or in terms of the numbers or estimated numbers you mentioned, you know, by 1991, the million students or so, this is something that's been growing over the years. So what kind of impact is it having in terms of nationally, do you know?
Sure. Nationally, I know there have been already about a million students reported just in our regional area. We have probably, I'm looking at it, it's updating as I look. So I see not all reports are in, but just in the state of Wisconsin, mostly here, it looks like there's, you know, 500, 600, and this is early on in the game.
So, Super.
And actually, you know, it's a global phenomenon. So there are kids praying around the world during Siwa at the pole as well.
And you kind of monitor what's going on in Wisconsin and Minnesota and what the Dakotas and Iowa. So what's your sense of maybe, you know, this year? I mean, you've been doing this for a while, but what's your sense of any early stories back so far?
You know, I haven't had any stories back yet. A lot of that starts to pour in a day or two later. Okay. But let me tell you this story, though. This is a fun one right from my own hometown. Sunday night, we gathered students who said, yeah, we want to lead. And so there's a couple of adults. We said, well, let's do that. We want to help you and walk you through and just you guys plan it out, but we want to make sure you feel comfortable as you lead. And so we're setting it out and saying, okay, who can pray and who feel comfortable leading and all that. And then it came to a point of saying, hey, what about giving a testimony about your faith? And this young man, he's an eighth grader. His name is Noah. And he just lit up. He's like, you know, prayer changed my brother's life. He was kind of going in the wrong direction after we moved to Wisconsin. We're from California, so it was kind of a hard move for him, and he was in high school. But through prayer, my prayers and the prayers of my parents, he really has turned in his life around, and it's so cool to see. And after he talked, it was just kind of a matter of fact, hey, this is what happened to me. And after he was done, everybody just kind of sat there and was like, whoa. You know, and that's what I love about See You at the Pole is you hear stories like that where students are actually sharing about what prayer has done in their life, and it causes their friends to go, maybe this prayer thing really does work. And it opens up conversations to have with their friends. And, you know, we don't want people going off and, you know, starting debates at school. Rather, it's more a way of saying this is what happens when we rely on the power of prayer.
I was wondering, you know, in fact, maybe you can talk more about what does it really mean for a student to gather with other believers at their flagpole in prayer? I mean, would they generally know who those other students are anyway, or is this and this is kind of what all ages, right? So it could be you get what eighth graders or 10th graders or seniors, right? So.
Sure, absolutely, and there are different experiences and communities. It all depends on the school and how the school district is set up. For example, here in Plymouth, of course, there's Riverview Middle School. There's various elementary schools, and then you've got Plymouth High School. And there were like 30 kids who showed up at the pole at Riverview, but then at Plymouth High School, there was one kid who made a stand. And a pastor and his wife walked over and just prayed with them and really encouraged them. And so you have, on one hand, you have Riverview, where there are these kids who actually do have a Bible study during their lunchtime, and they connect and talk about the things of faith with each other. And they kind of rallied together, whereas the high school isn't, there's not that kind of a presence yet on that school. But then, again, you look at, you know, I heard my wife is a substitute teacher, and she went to a local high school, Oostburg High School, and she said there were 70 kids altogether, and there were middle school and high school simply because the middle school and high school are built together. So, you know, it all depends on the district of who they see. And what's really encouraging and what I love seeing is when kids walk away from that experience going, oh, I didn't know that they were Christian. You know, they feel like we're not alone on our campus. We're not by ourselves, that there are other people who we can talk to about faith. And maybe they're not in my youth group, but man, it's cool that they're praying together too.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, that's so important, isn't it? Just because it's tough being a kid in general, tough being in the school, and especially being a follower of Christ. In fact, I was going to ask you, I mean, do kids You know, does this end up setting students apart in maybe kind of an isolating way? It's like, so the bigger you know, group of students say, well, there's a group of Jesus freaks or something like that.
Well, you know, Neil, it's funny because I was just having a Twitter conversation with a friend, a youth pastor, who's like, well, it seems to sometimes it can do more harm than good, because it's more of a protest almost rather than actually standing up, or rather than really engaging with other people. But I push back on that and say, you know, are they coming together and is it encouraging for young people to do that? Absolutely. But my desire, my hope is that the faith community of that certain city or whatever, that they're actually pouring into these kids and helping them to understand that when they stand there and say, I'm a Christian, it's not about I'm better than you. It's how can I be a light at my school? How can I make school a positive place? And so I believe that See You at the Pole and kids gathering together for faith. Now, there can be some people who, you know, we're just kind of this holy huddle and we isolate ourselves. But I think there's also, for every one of those, there are at least two other groups that they're kind of they're wrestling through, saying, how do I tell my friends about the love of Jesus Christ, that they have the answer to the problems, to the issues that kids are facing, through drugs, through cutting, through depression, all of these different things, the pressures of performance. You're saying we do have an answer, and not in a mean-spirited, neener-neener way, right? But rather we wanted to humbly engage with their friends about prayer and about God.
Jason Count is the North Central Regional Coordinator for the National Network of Youth Ministries, talking to us from his home base in Plymouth, Wisconsin. We're getting a little update on the See You at the Pole activities, and we're going to talk more about, you know, some of the challenges that our students are facing today, and how we can encourage them and how we can be praying for them, not just once on a Wednesday morning in September, but on a regular basis. We'll talk more with Jason in just a moment. By the way, if you had you know, a child that participated in See You at the Pole, it's something that is, you know, really encouraged me as a parent. I know my kids took part, and I would love to hear your story. You want to just sort of brag on your kids, or maybe you're a teacher, and just know how much it means that your students are wanting to live out their faith in a winsome, real way. Love to have you join the conversation. You can do that with a phone call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. More Jason Cotton in just a moment here on Connecting Faith. Across our nation, really around the world today, this morning, while you were getting ready, having your cup of coffee or breakfast or heading out to work, your students, hopefully many of them, and the students in your church youth group and in your school are gathering around a flagpole. Sometimes just one person making a stand. Other times there's 30, 40, 50 perhaps gathering around the flagpole to pray. It's an annual event called See You at the Pole. And we're getting an update on it from Jason Cott, who's the North Central Regional Coordinator for the National Network of Youth Ministries. And they've been helping in the leadership and coordination of See You at the Pole for a number of years. And Jason, we're talking a little bit about just, talking to you from Plymouth, Wisconsin, which is not a big community. So
no, we're only about 8 to 10,000 people.
Yeah, but do a great job with.
But we're mighty, and we love our cheese.
That's right. You do a great job with cheese.
We're the cheese capital.
Sure. if you want to know about cheese, it's Plymouth, Wisconsin, or toilet fixtures. I suppose plumbing, right? We can talk about
Kohler.
Absolutely.
Right, yep. Kohler's okay. Not too far away from us.
Sure.
Either. Yep.
So just trying to show Ryan that I know my geography. Anyway, so I'm interested though. Is it different? See at the Pole, being a Christian on campus, is that different? Maybe in a small school versus a big school. As you worked with youth ministries around the area, I mean, is that a factor? The size of the school?
I believe it can be, absolutely. It also depends on the context of what's going on in that community. I mean, my friend Dan Bouchot, I know, does a lot of great ministry work there in the Minneapolis area with campus ministry. And in a place like that where you have students active on the campus, that's probably going to happen a lot more in some metro areas like Minneapolis. So there might be a little more support and more of a movement that kids feel that, yeah, we can do this. We want to be at the pole together. Whereas, you know, there are some places out in the rural community where nobody even knows about CU at the pole. And the student maybe heard about it or saw it on a Facebook post or something like that, or and they're like, hey, I want to do this. Well, a lot of times in rural communities, you don't have youth pastors necessarily. Rural communities are it's a lot of volunteers, and those are my heroes, are the people who are volunteering and just working with kids as best they can. And you know, a kid comes to them and says, hey, I'd like to do this. You know, it's like, oh, okay, well, you know, how do we do this? And you know, there's great places where they can get resources at syatp.com. But you know, the kid is sitting there, and you know, maybe they're going to show up just by themselves alone, and that can be a very scary proposition. In fact, I was just talking to a mom who drove by the high school that I was talking about earlier, where one kid showed up, and she's like, oh, she felt like she wanted to be over there by him, and so she went over and stood by him. And just because she was part of the planning team and started to pray, join that little group that was praying with him of adults, and just said, you know, as I was standing there and just encouraging him, I thought, oh, my word, you know, what are people going to think? What are, you know, why are those adults over there talking to that kid? And why is, you know, and she just said she felt that what the kids must feel. And I was like, wow, that is really insightful, because in a small rural community like that, if you're the only one, sometimes people talk, right?
Yeah.
And it's not always good. Or it can go the other way too. It can go to the fact that we've had students where one kid will gather, and then the next year there's 30 kids who will gather because they were inspired by the kid who made a stand up for his faith.
Sure. Jason, you worked with you know, youth ministries and individual youth and parents, obviously, and educators for a number of years. How should maybe parents encourage their students? How could we be praying for those students that did take a stand today? And I'm sure you, youth pastors can't do it all. So if you had the opportunity to speak to parents, what's maybe one or two things you say, this would really make a difference if you did this?
Oh, get involved in the life of your school. Be a light. If we're telling our kids, hey, be a light and reach out to your friends, parents, how can you get involved on the school campus in a positive way, not demanding rights, not trying to preach, but just serving. Serve your school well and find other Christians. I have an example right now outside of our office. There's it's kind of an intersection between the middle school and the high school, and kids come by every day and just walking home from school. And my wife and I are sitting here going, man, there's a lot of kids just going right by our window. We're not doing anything. How could we show our support? So we worked with a church that was next door to us that has a patio that opens out into the street. And we're like, what if we just served up cookies and lemonade? Whereas it gets colder, of course, we're going to switch over to hot chocolate. But how can we do that? Wouldn't that be fun? And we got some different parents involved. And let me tell you, right now, last week, there were four people from four different churches serving up, you know, cookies and just loving kids and letting them know that they're cared and supported for in their community. So look for those kind of ways. Henry Blackaby in Experiencing God says, you know, go where God is and join him there. You know, how are you going to know how God is engaging with the youth of our community if you're not where they are? And that's a majority of them are on campus and in the local schools. So get there, and serve.
Good word. What's your sense of how maybe teachers and administrators respond to something like see at the poll? And because I know when the kids are praying, they're not just praying for each other. They're praying for their school and their teachers as well, right?
Absolutely. Well, I've run into teachers who have really appreciated the fact that kids are out there and they're praying for them, the principals, the school administration, these kids are actually praying for them. And it does. You know, I've run into teachers who have said, hey, thanks for doing that. That means a lot to me. You know, and some teachers are Christian and feel good about it. Some people are even not Christian, but at least, you know, you know, Jimmy's out there praying for me, but mom, you know, it's even if you don't believe, there's something about the fact that, you know, hey, the kid is praying for me. At least he's not thinking about how he can cause mischief for me today.
Sure.
Maybe he's thinking about me in a positive light, you know? So, I think it's overall seen as a positive thing on the campus. Well, I'm sure there's always going to be the exceptions. I'm sure that there are teachers who feel frustrated or, you know, people who are not of faith going, well, you know, what's going on, or is this legal? But luckily those battles have all been really fought in the courts, so to speak, and it's very clear that they can do it. But again, I think it behooves us as the Christians, if we're gathering at that flagpole, how are we treating those who are skeptics, those who are not believers? I hope that it encourages us to engage with them and love and show the love of Christ.
But Jason, you've been working with junior high and middle school kids for years, and I'm wondering what are you seeing maybe in terms of their challenges today, perhaps compared to even just a few years ago, and how could we, you know, if we don't have teens in school, what could we be doing maybe just to pray, as you said, to be encouraging them?
Oh man, I think the biggest shift I've seen with students is the pure pressure. And I'm not talking about peer pressure. I'm talking about pressure parents put on them, pressure the coaches, the teachers, everybody's putting on them. And a lot of times it's the athletes or the kids who are doing really good in school, and that pressure really gets to them. And I'm afraid sometimes what we do is, because we want them to succeed well in life, We really try to push them, and you got to do better, and you know we really drive at our kids. But in reality, we need to let them go into the hands of God, and we need to walk alongside them as they go through their life. I think there is so much pressure that kids are afraid to engage with adults. So the more adults we have that are caring, showing the unconditional love of God. Because thanks be to Jesus Christ that no matter if I mess up, no matter what I've done, if I fall short, Jesus is there to pick me up and point me towards grace. We need to be able to do that with our kids when maybe they embarrass us in school because of their behavior. Rather than allow the embarrassment to turn into anger, why not face that embarrassment head on with your child and work through it with them, with a pastor, with a counselor, with somebody, so that the kids understand that they're loved. And even when you fail, we're here. We love you. We care about you.
I know that the National Network of Youth Ministries, believes that the youth of any nation or society is its greatest treasure, and there's really no question about that. So, Jason, thanks for all that you're doing, and people could probably find out more about the network of youth ministries if they're in youth ministry, especially, or volunteering with their church. There's some ways to partner and get resources, right?
Absolutely. The National Network of Youth Ministries national website is www.youthworkers.net. And because I know you broadcast to specifically my region, it would be good for people to check out www.nnymnorthcentral.net. And on there, they can find all different ways that we want to serve and help communities develop networks of people who gather around these students and just want to care and pray and share the gospel with kids in their community.
Jason, appreciate what you're doing. may your tribe increase, huh? And keep giving those cookies and lemonade out. It sounds like a great outreach. So.
Will do. Thank you for the time and for focusing on See at the Pole. It's an important time to really invest in the lives of kids and encourage them. So thanks for highlighting it.
Jason Kotz, North Central Regional Coordinator, is with the National Network of Youth Ministries. You can find out more at youthworkers.net and encourage you to just remember to pray today for those students who stood out there this morning, maybe on their own or with other classmates, saying, I'm going to, you know, call on the Lord on behalf of my fellow students in my school. So continue to pray for them. And thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.